Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Dan Q.
Makalua.
The Mian Team.
Ed Jin.
A composite show archive segment from previous episode that got cut due to time. Recorded for episode 237 with Dan Q, Makalua, the Mian Team, Majin, and Zeti Zarish. Mega Bears fan, past guest on this show, published an article on his blog, Call for More Empire Management for Civilization 6. Since Civ 5 already went down the warfare first, empire management second design philosophy, I hope that Civ 6 goes in the opposite direction. I hope that it puts more of its focus on being an empire-building game rather than a tactical war game. And yes, there are quotations throughout the quotation. Game setting filter. Wouldn't it be nice if, in addition to being able to pick the game settings that you want, the setup screen gave you the ability to filter out the game settings that you don't want? As part of the advanced game settings, the player should be able to check off which civs. Yes. Sold. Map types, map sizes, game speeds, and maybe even difficulty levels that they want to be available when these settings are randomized. Yes, I am tired of seeing you, Shaka. I would say absence makes the heart grow fonder, but that would be bullshit. Get out.
Get out.
Hit the road, Jack.
Civ isn't Civ without Shaka in there to troll you, though.
We've talked about this before, specifically with Civs, not this Civ, even just this once. That would be great.
It's true. If you've had someone like the last four games by coincidence, you don't want to see that Civ again. I can get behind that for certain.
Yeah.
And tying to some turncast things as well, I don't want to be this Civ again. Randomize me something else, please.
Yeah.
No, it seems something easy to implement. I don't know why they didn't do it.
Yeah, like, I want to play a random Civ, but I have played these X Civs so many times lately, can I eliminate them from the possibility list?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I'm sure what can happen is if a modder hasn't already done it, they can do that and just send the code to Fraxis, and then it'll be in the game. Look at that. Wonderful! They didn't have to spend a cent!
Exactly.
Anyway. Multiplayer on the go. Ooh, this got my interest. Let's face it, it's hard to find reliable players who will sit through an entire game of Civ.
True, outside of our little group, yeah.
Yeah, Mega Bears fan, haven't seen you in our group in a very long time.
Oh, hey, Dan. Come on.
Mega Bears fan says, even though I have three or four close friends who are fans of the series, I still have trouble organizing and maintaining multiplayer games. If we can't finish internet multiplayer games with simultaneous turns, we'll surely never finish a hot seat game unless the PC game included the ability to convert multiplayer games from hot seat to LAN to internet games and vice versa.
I don't see why not. You save a game and you host it in a different game mode and people pick their Civ and, yeah, that shouldn't be too hard.
It shouldn't be. I guess maybe I hesitate because it's kind of like, okay, I want to join your multiplayer game. Don't be the Civ. Oh, and maybe that's Civ because that's the next available player. Oh. None of that, please.
What's the shape of Italy?
This was interesting. Previous turn budget overview. Wouldn't it be nice if you're able to compare your current budget with the last turn or with multiple preceding turns? Sure, most of these events would trigger some kind of notification, but not all. Previous turn breakdowns for the economy, happiness, and health, if applicable, would be circumstantial, but very helpful addition to future games. Such a widget might also be worthwhile for other economic indicators like science and production output. Yeah, something that you can just toggle on or off if you want to be able to look at that. I want to look at this. Great. I want to be able to hide it, but look at it later. It's taking up too much valuable real estate on my user interface. Okay, bye. I don't want to look at that thing at all. Numbers scare me. They're big and round.
I mean, they could have that come up as one so you don't get 18 notifications. You just get one screen that you can click, and it just kind of slides over, and you can see everything that's changed, like you've lost a trade route or this or that, you know? That would definitely be nice.
One on-screen notification in red. You have 30 notifications. OMG, go look at this screen.
Yeah, they, I really do hope they don't have that many notifications next game, because it's been much sometimes.
Sometimes it
would manage it differently.
I just feel like there should be an easier way to tell if you've been sent a deal and you have a bunch of other notifications and the deal is off screen.
Well, you can have, like, the tutorial advisors, right? And where you specify, like, I'm new to Civ completely. I'm new to this Civ title, but not Civ at all. I've played this game before, and so then that regulates in part the kind of notifications that you're getting.
Oh, yeah, you should have a toggle switch for all notifications.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Because there are a lot that you just don't care about, especially if you're micromanaging anyway. Like, you don't need to know that your city grew if you microed your workers and saw that it was going to grow on the following turn. It's not necessary.
And don't forget the requisite option, no notifications at all. I like to live in ignorance.
Well, certainly be interesting. I sent you a deal. What? I didn't see it. What's this? Peace deal? Nope. I don't see any deal offer.
What peace deal?
Send it again.
I'm still not seeing
one more
it.
Time.
Oh, well.
That's right, Brittany. and then ideas for expanding and revising existing Civ 5 features. Whoa. Those are some big words. No, I'm kidding. Autonomous city-states. I'd like to see city-states that have more fully featured diplomacy mechanics, such as they can declare war on civs that they dislike. Maybe those that bully them constantly.
Yeah,
they
have to keep stealing their workers in the early game?
It's appropriating. You don't steal. Come on, Mackie. Really.
I appropriate a lot.
We'll give it back later after they're not mad at us anymore. And then we'll get influence with them.
Right.
Wahaha. Haven't done that a few hundred times.
Mediate disputes between city-states. I don't know. I kind of like the, hey, this city-state wants you to bully the other guy. They'd really like that. I mean, I guess that's kind of the mediation we have right now, air quotes, mediation.
Quote, unquote.
And I'd also like to see city-states be a more active part of the game's trade networks, maybe even having their own trade units. And maybe successful city-states could even evolve into full civilizations as the game progresses. Whoa!
Crazy thought.
My gosh.
I mean, that seems like Civ 2. If you wiped out a Civ fast enough, another one would appear.
Yes, and also you took the capital of a Civ, then it could split into two.
Oh,
the Civil War mechanic.
That was hilarious.
That would be kind of fun, even in the regular game now, if you did that and you were able to knock out, punch somebody's capital, and then they split into two.
Oh, you got, like, one of those, like, continents that are just covered in AI, and it just splits.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. That would suck to have it happen to you, though.
Yeah, it would. It really would. But...
see a lot more emphasis on D-ing up that capital, because, jeez.
Yeah, that'd be rage quit worthy.
Yeah. Well, usually if you're losing your capital, you're probably not coming back without any outside intervention anyway, but,
yeah.
You know.
You're probably close to the rage quit barrier already.
Although, if you get rebellions, the rebels actually take a city, that could be the start of breaking you down.
True.
As opposed to the rebels of 10 unhappiness plus that just go around and pillaging your stuff.
Yep, and make you even more unhappy.
Compound the problem. Thanks, guys.
If they did that and then actually broke away, that'd be awesome. But they kind of forgot that last step. But yeah, no, as for his point about better city-state stuff, sure, always. There's lots of stuff you can do with that. And obviously going to stations of Beyond Earth was the exact opposite direction. So if you have city-state A hating on city-state B, maybe they can actually declare war on each other. And then if they do declare war, maybe they can ask for allies in that war.
It'd be nice to see them be more active. Definitely. Instead of just kind of be there, kind of sitting there waiting to be wiped out.
Yep. Or that jerk bullied us. Will you five other people, including potentially other city-states, all band together and declare war on them?
Do I hate you more asking for this request, or do I hate more who you would like me to attack? Hello, villager choir.
They always wanted to have an appearance like all the guests.
More natural wonders. I would like to see more of these wonders in future versions of the game. I think that the mechanics surrounding natural wonders could also be expanded to encourage exploration at different periods of the game. And just as an aside, why did I first think of Spain in Civ 5 when I read that?
Gilderada.
For example, wonders could appear in the middle of the ocean and provide strong benefits to the first player to research astronomy, or properly put, astronomy. Mm-hmm. And discover them. Some wonders could require some prerequisite in order to encounter them, such as requiring advancement to a particular era or a technology prerequisite. Former about being appearing in the middle of the ocean, and I start thinking about Civilization Revolution. And, oh, hey, you're the first to this. Boom, look at all this research we suddenly got from this effect. And, yeah, I think that could work in a Civilization 6, although maybe not to the same exponential degree as they did in CivRev. Woo. But, you know, something for flavor.
Yeah, or other things. Because he talked about, he doesn't like the fact that there's so many holy mountains, per se.
He wants an unholy mountain?
Yeah, exactly. If you think about it more in respect, why are some mountains holy? Because people grew up around them and then they became part of the religion. So maybe instead of having one start as faith-giving, that they just happen to be natural under, you build a pantheon and you go, okay, that's our holy mountain. And all of a sudden it starts giving faith as you build up the pantheon or something along that line.
That makes sense.
You know, when it comes to natural wonders, I'd be happy with three things. One, Krakatoa is workable every time. Two.
No.
Good luck with that.
No, we need a meme.
Yes, there can be other memes. Second, the full extent of the Great Barrier Reef can also be worked at some point in time. And third, and most importantly, the Grand Mesa is actually grand. Okay.
Yeah, versus just wah-wah-wah. You know, I can build a mine here and get more.
Speaking of wah-wah, this is my personal opinion, great works in archaeology. Mega Bear fans like to see artifacts appear in the ocean, shipwrecks, underwater cities, and so on. Since we can place works of art and ancient artifacts in museums, why not have features in which we can place exotic animals in our zoos and circuses to entertain our citizens and educate our scientists? Why not be able to see what sporting events we want to be played in our coliseums, arenas, and stadiums? And that actually made me think of SimCity, and then you get a particular team playing in your stadium. And
I control all the pandas. You have to have good diplomacy for me to give you a panda.
And he also talks about a paleontology sub-feature. Could be a new technology that branches off of archaeology. These natural artifacts could provide science rather than cultural and tourism.
Ooh.
Yeah, do natural artifacts. So, hey, look, we found this creature that got killed off a long time ago.
Woohoo! We're going to make a whole theme park about them.
Mm-hmm.
Will the goal of these be just to try to increase your tourism, to try to get you a culture victory? I mean, like, I feel like we have to ask, like, that kind of question. You know, what's the purpose of this? A lot of these ideas are good, but what exactly is the goal? You know?
Well, I think the natural artifact would be, instead of giving more culture, you'd get more science, but it would still effectively be tourist booster in the end.
Well, yeah. Hey, we discovered this particular ruin. It increased our science. Hey, that sounds like something that would also have an impact on your culture and your tourism. Wow, how did you get so much science? Well, why don't you come and have a look for yourself? Okay. I want $15 for parking. What?
Yep.
That Mega Bears fan treads into very dangerous waters, and I will put that in quotation. Take it as you will. Some features from previous Civ games that I would like to see return. Ah, no.
Oh, dear.
I so wish corruption was on this list, but it's not.
Nope.
It's not that crazy.
But you have to be a little bit crazy.
It's something he would like to see, not the...
something he's going to go, ah.
Did you hear the air quotes? Destructive city sieges. In Civ 3, attacking a city with a siege weapon would destroy its walls, but also had the risk of killing population, damaging units garrisoned inside the city, or destroying buildings, including potentially wonders. Oof. I added oof, by the way. Doing damage to the population and infrastructure of the city creates genuine consequence to a prolonged siege. This makes it more important to protect your border cities from enemy incursions and even from barbarians, since enemy forces that aren't big enough to actually take the city can still do damage. It also adds more realism to the game, since wonders of the world were often destroyed prematurely by invading armies. The wonders thing, that is true. There is a realism connection there, but the gameplay... not the wonders part. Maybe damage. Maybe they're damaged, so you're not going to maybe have the effect of that wonder for X number of turns. Not destroy it completely. I could get on board with that. Destroying certain buildings. Sure, there is a tie to that with espionage. And I'm thinking in Civilization IV, a mission where you could, you know, like, disable the defensive buildings. I think we even saw that in Civ Rev with spies. I could get on board with that, too.
I think one thing that would be great is if, as you keep sieging a city, if you get its health down, then the strength starts to go down, so eventually you can, you know, walk in as well. I think that would be a welcome addition, because I don't like sieging these AIs that just keep popping out units and you can just never take the city.
To me, the best for a city siege, and would be very historically accurate as well, is you're starving the city.
Yes, I agree.
You can sort of do that now if you cover all the land.
It takes so long, though.
Yeah. But, yeah, so some ability for destructive city sieges, yeah, that'd probably be nicer.
You need to tone down, like, the length of time it is before cities are useful, though, like, if you did that. Because it's already problematic.
Yeah. There would be more balancing factors in there, like having to rebuild the granary shouldn't take you another 20 years just because while your production went away and stuff like that.
They could also have a building health bar there, and you just see it go down, and that building's broken, then you have another one pop up with full health, and you can kind of see it coming, you know?
Well, that, and if you've already had a granary once, if it gets destroyed, in most cases, most siege, unless we're like really, really, you know, later in the game and things are being obliterated, you're going to be able to cannibalize probably some of the resources that you used initially. You're going to be able to use that again. So if the granary initially cost you 6 turns to construct, it's going to take us 4 turns or 3 turns. We'll get it back, but it has been destroyed and we don't have it for these turns.
Yeah, so you can fix it. So that should be a secondary list of things you can do, is fixing broken stuff.
Yes, and then maybe the opposing army then decides, okay, we're going to go after buildings again. I could just see it. We destroyed your granary. We rebuilt it. We just destroyed it again. We rebuilt it. Maybe something in there that's like, maybe when we rebuild the granary, it's going to stand up to a little more bombardment, perhaps, and maybe another building is at greater risk of getting destroyed rather than it being the same building over and over again. I think Civ 4, hey, they got my forge. No, not again.
Fire destroys forge. Fire destroys forge. Fire destroys forge.
Don't miss that.
But I would probably suggest that if you're under siege, you're not exactly going to walk out and go, hey guys, hold on while I build this granary right in front of you, even though you were just here to burn it down.
Oh, I know. That would definitely, yeah, in reality, no, that would not happen. But
for gameplay purposes, I'd be like, mostly the bombardment would do damage to the defensive buildings, but would have, like, splash damage, basically, on the population in the buildings.
Well, yeah, because that was the point, right? We want to be able to soften up the defenses so we can move in our troops.
And killing off populations would get higher as you got better and better ways of mass bombardment, like, you know, bombers.
And as sieges continued turn after turn after turn after turn.
And perhaps you could have to be forced to go through the castle walls, then the actual walls, before you could actually start hitting buildings, too. So there's that kind of predictability, you know, it's not just random, oh, I lost the granary or something.
Well, it depends on what you're getting hit with. Like, if you're getting attacked by infantry and maybe archers and stuff like that, then yeah, you'd have to go through the walls before you could actually do damage to things, because derp, your infantry can't walk past the walls to blow up the granary if the granary's on the inside of the wall. But if you're using catapults, then you should be shooting over the wall or at the wall. Randomness might blow up some people.
And that randomness could be less random over time. You get better technology. We can actually see to some degree what it is that we are, say, bombing with our bombers as compared to the catapult outside. We're going to hit something inside. What are we going to hit? I don't know. Stuff?
I want to purposely mass bomb. We shall cover the entire city with explosions. I guess if you're going to do that, then you should also probably put in a migration-related mechanic. People getting bombed on, they tend not to stay there if they're not military. They tend to want to just, like, leave the area of conflict. So
they just have them spread to the neighboring cities or something?
Yeah, not just disappear off the map completely.
Yeah, some dispersion, not complete dispersion, because some will die.
Yeah.
But some, yes.
Maybe make it on map, so they move a tile or two per turn. And then if they really want to go evil, can run around killing off all the refugees.
Yeah, maybe that could be abstracted on the screen as a worker, for example. And if you decide, hey, those guys are fleeing, let's move a unit here to go onto that tile and kill them, then yeah, you can do that. Or you can decide, let them go. Let them tell neighboring cities what terrors we are.
Yep. Or let's shove all this population into that neighboring civ that I might want to beat up later, but I don't want to do it right now. And now you have all of these refugees to deal with. Enjoy.
Enjoy your cultural and ethnic strife. More flexible tech tree. Civilization IV's technology tree included optional paths, alternate requirements, and even some dead-end techs. It allowed players more flexibility in how they progressed through the tree and could follow routes that better represented their needs. I want to see this flexibility return in Civ 6 so the Civs aren't railroaded down specific paths or forced to waste time on techs they will never use. It's nice that Civ 5's tech tree included useful items and abilities in each tech, but this is a design necessity since every tech must be researched. And I enjoyed the part about not wasting time on techs that they'll never use, and then, and I know it's not a complete juxtaposition, but then enjoying the part about having dead-end techs.
Yeah. Which one of those did you like and not like? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Well, sometimes dead-end techs could be worth it, though.
Yeah, it depends on what you put in the dead-end tech.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you give a unit that's going to be better than other technology paths for the next, 50 turns, so that you can all-in somebody with it, that's actually useful.
That's a good risk versus reward.
Yeah. Those techs can be civilization-specific as well.
Yep. Or it could be a wonder. A wonder plus some game mechanic in the tech so that if you research it, you can build the wonder. And if somebody else built the wonder, you don't have to research it.
And that can slow down the computer too. Yeah. Since they like to build every wonder, you'd be going for those.
Well, you have to
set it up. Price. Give them more of a cost, opportunity cost for going for like every single wonder.
Yep. There is benefits to having dead end techs, like religion stuff. Because, you know, at some point in the game...
Sorry, but I just...
dead end text and religion is like,
I just enjoyed the juxtaposition of how some could interpret that. Pardon me.
Yeah. Oops. Send all hate mail, too.
Yep. But other stuff like alternate paths and things like that would be cool to have back.
Speaking of cool things to have back, in fact, this would be so cool. It's like an ice bath on a hot, humid day. The drawing layer. Civ 4 allowed the player to draw freehand lines and place labels on the map. It may seem superficial, but this feature allowed players to record their plans so that you could remember what you were planning on doing when you reload the game. This is especially useful if you're continuing a game that you haven't played for weeks or months. Now, for me, after weeks or months of not playing a Civ, I lose my emotional investment. But still, I get that, yes, being able to draw, even if it's just for yourself.
Even if it's from one weekend to the next or something.
Yeah. And if I want to draw a little caricature of somebody or something, then I should be allowed to do that.
Yeah. I like putting annoying messages for my permanent allies. That was fun to do.
Yes.
Maggie quietly said
that. I feel like they didn't include this.
No,
they,
but it's
how, they like how Civ 5 just looks so nice and clean and they don't want to, you know, dirty it up or something. You know?
You could have like a label layer. Hey, I labeled this on the map. I don't see it. Why don't you label it again?
But also, you know, when we were doing that in multiplayer, we were, like, cooperatively naming different parts on the map.
Yeah.
I was your ally. You labeled too much on the map. Declare war. What?
I would dot map for my allies sometimes, too. If I
like, no, settle your city here, you dum-dum.
Like we ever used the phrase dum-dum. But I get the point. Yeah.
Yes, yes,
no,
yes.
No, that wasn't one of my techniques. I had different words for people. Yes.
Yes, ability to draw on the map. Or the ability to go here.
That would be handy now when you're trying to plan cooperative wars against an AI, and you're like, no, go from this side. No, over there. No, no, there. Or like in early multiplayer when we're talking about where people want to settle and we can't quite describe the place.
Just draw the map. This here is mine. See, look, I drew on the map and said, oh,
where
this is mine.
This is mine, and this is mine, and this is mine.
I'm going to need all your land.
I'm going to need your land.
Build clothes for the win.
And of course, last but not least, multiple leaders with different uniques for every Civ.
I don't know. I think I've kind of gotten used to have that one identifiable leader per Civ.
I liked it, but I also think the time that you're going to spend doing that in development can be better spent in other things. It's like a risk versus reward sort of a thing for me.
I mean, as long as the
easy DLC
leaders,
money, go, go, go.
Yeah, pretty much. As long as the multiple Civ concept on a Civ, that there's not, this leader is clearly better than that leader, so why would everyone?
Yeah.
Another big issue, too, is if you think about it, and they have to make all these other leaders, like triple leaders, then they have to make all those animations and all those new characters from when you meet them, if you have that in Civ 6 as well. So that's a lot of money. I don't know if they want to pull that money.
Well, it depends. Like, either you have less overall Civs, but more leaders, or you have more overall Civs, but less leaders. So that's kind of where they went with Civ 5, was just more Civs.
Yeah.
I think it's more interesting.
If you had to choose between the two, I like Civ 5's choice. Because there's a number of Civs that you just never saw previously, and they're cool.
Yeah.
Although you could save some time on the art assets if you just had, like, a silhouette as the representation.
People would be like,
this is Washington. This is Lincoln for America. How can you tell?
Don't even bother the silhouette. Just put the text there.
Yep.
Washington.
Two things from this. MegaBears fan acknowledged random personalities. He said, I could always disable start biases and enable random personalities, but this can hurt game balance and removes a lot of the historical flavor that makes the game enjoyable. Okay, so I'm assuming that's, like, respectively. Yes, disable start bias, hurt game balance. Yeah, we've seen that. Hey, I'm Venice. I disabled start bias.
Crap, it's a lake.
Yeah.
And as for removing a lot of the historical flavor that makes the game enjoyable, okay, now that's an opinion. I don't share that opinion. I can see that. I don't need that historical flavor. If I want that historical flavor, then I won't random personalities. I don't need separate leaders.
but randoming personalities could also have the deleterious effect of they have bonuses towards something very, very specific, and then all of a sudden you random them to completely ignore them, which could be problematic.
Mm.
The best part of his comment, though, was this sort of feature could also allow some civilizations to be combined into one, since different leaders could represent various incarnations of a civilization throughout history. All right, Politicast, Holy Roman Empire, go.
Yep. Actually, if you get a little further. But finally, for a more radical concept, civs could have different leaders over the course of the game. One per era, perhaps.
Oh.
Kind of like maybe Civ Rev, where every era you got something different.
Hmm. Yeah, I could see. I mean, it's still the same leader, but yeah, like in Civ Rev, you get another ability added. Or it's like, this will emerge eventually. I could get on board with that, but hey, it's a different era, so Lincoln is gone, and now it's Roosevelt. Okay, whoa, stop.
Really have to have a lot of leaders for Civ.
Yeah.
And then you would also have to delete the concept of unique X for Civs, because right now for Civ 5, you get them all right at the beginning, and some might pop on later, but you'd have to go, okay, well, our unique unit right now is this. Oh, we changed leaders, so now our unique unit is that.
Yeah, that came up as well. Oh, jeez.
I think you have to keep unique units without changing leaders and, like, make the leader change, like, your prior generation statistics or something, like, get more production or more this or more that, rather than just having your units tell a change mid-war.
And for the scale of Civ, I mean, if you want to say Civ only goes from, like, 4,000 to 2,000 BC or something like that, you know, a lot of these, like, intricacies of unique this versus unique that, and era this, and leader that, I think that could work, but, oh my gosh, we'll start development on this game today, we'll check back in 2020, see how well the balance is going.
It's a lot of work. Like, Duke Nukem Forever.
That turned out great.
And the Forever was talking about the development.
Yeah, it was aptly named.
And the amount of time between times you play it.
Spherical map. Civ 4 allowed the player to zoom the map out to a degree that the map would be drawn onto a spherical globe that could be rotated. In this mode, the game was not actually playable because the game's map isn't actually mapped to a sphere. I would really like to see Civ 6 actually play out on a genuinely spherical map. While it may not seem like much of a difference, it can have significant effects on how the game is played for those civs that are near the north and south extremes of the map. For one thing, these civs wouldn't have as much room to expand east or west, and will have to expand north or south as well.
I'm going to point out, in real world, those who were on the north and the south pole never actually went north or south, because it frozen.
Yeah, not a lot of food there, or anything else for that matter.
It seems like it's just going to make being north that more frustrating than it already is.
Well, I would probably suggest that it's a good idea for being able to move through it, going from Canada to Russia invasion sort of thing, but that would probably be more of literally that's it.
That would have to be late era. Like, the thought of marching through the poles with an organized military force
not going to happen. But the
and if your soldiers can survive that and be a strong fighting force at the other end, the other side is screwed. You might as well be pouring in the bear cavalry at that point.
Yes. But more appropriately, on a spherical map, you could actually have airplanes and such go on more realistic arcs. So going over the poles will get you there faster than just trying to go direct, like on a flat map.
I mean, I feel like they could fix this in a different way by just allowing you in some way to do that without having this weird sphere map. I feel like there's, like, workarounds.
Possibly.
Because if you think about, like, the way the map's going to be and with all the hexes, like, how are you going to make that work? I'm not sure how you're going to make that work, honestly.
I don't know. There's ways to make it work. I've played games that have done that before.
Yeah.
Just will it really work on a lower-level detailed setup like Civ has?
Or if they just made the map into, you know, no more hexes and actual distances, like somebody suggested. I saw somewhere in one of the threads, like, that would make this a lot easier.
Mega Bears Fan also floated the idea of a coordinate-based terrain map, but it might be a bit too difficult to achieve with current technology, quote-unquote. I think that's more like he gets you generating a random freeform map. Would be extremely difficult. I mean, you could do it. And also, this to me is also the question of we could, but just because you can do something.
Doesn't mean you should.
It's not impossible since some game dev tools like Unity comes packaged with regenerators. I don't think you'll ever see Civ built on Unity. It can be done. Will it look like Civ after that's been done? That's a different issue.
Changing climate. Instead of having random weather events, oh, Phil probably likes this already. I would like to see some kind of climate simulation. This feature could include ocean currents that affect trade routes and naval unit movement. It caused droughts or extended wet seasons or mini ice ages that could affect tile yields or maybe even temporarily change underlying terrain. These changes in terrain or yield could also lead to a crop resources disappearing if overworked, animals dying out if overhunted.
Oh my gosh.
Or the animal resources migrating to more favorable weather conditions.
Look, we're not playing SimEarth, so we're not working on geological scales here.
Yeah.
We're not playing a game where a famine of 1 year is going to be reasonably represented in the game. When you're advancing turns by 20 years, stuff like animal migrations, it's just asinine to try and include that. I mean, it's bad enough that we have, like, 300-year wars if you fight early enough in the game, but having that kind of stuff, it's just frustrating. You'll get hit randomly by crap you don't prepare for, and it just doesn't make sense at the game's time scale.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting if, like, all the snow come down or, like, the deserts expand, but you'd have to know really early, like, 10 turns before, like, get a warning message or something. But I don't see what this adds.
Yeah. When you can model deforestation, that was a thing across the history, and you could reasonably show, like, forests both being chopped and regrowed if you really care. It depends how much you want chopping to be a thing in Civ. It was huge in Civ 4. It still matters in 5, but less so.
Well, in 5 you can't regrow forests, so
yeah.
There's that.
You could in Civ 4, but it was slow. But the more ridiculous stuff you'd see is people who are running like the lowest difficulties and trying to get super fast Wolsey spaceship times like BC's finishes. You would see them chop forests into spaceship parts. It was hilarious.
You don't build your spaceships out of wood.
Yeah, they're chomping out like spaceship casing. I'm serious.
Now, granted, some of the stuff he's talking about is too micro even for Civ, like storms.
300-year storm raging through the continent.
Yeah, that's a little too hard to get in. So weather events, not so much. Bigger stuff, though, that did take over long periods, like the mini ice ages.
Yeah, I guess.
That actually did go over a couple hundred years. There are some drought-ish issues that could take a long time. But ocean currents, realistically, ocean currents haven't fundamentally moved over the last 4,000 years. I mean, yes, they have variances as they go, but they haven't fundamentally changed until we screw it all up and we go back to the next ice age because we killed the ocean currents.
The ocean.
But animal migration, sure. If you have, say, a bunch of deer in an area and they're getting tired of getting hunted, they would move, except that you have other functional issues like actual real migrations of animals. Say, the massive caribou herd that lives in the Northwest Territories that actually runs back and forth every year across the Northwest Territories, which functionally in Civ doesn't make sense because they exist in one hex in Civ versus, like, existing
hex.
Versus all over it. But I would almost want that sort of system until you stop the herd, like for cows or horses and stuff, that they could possibly still move around. And then you actually need stuff like animal husbandry and penning them to keep them in one spot, so stables and stuff like that. Or being able to breed them and move them to another continent, kind of like in history when there was no horses in North America. And then all of a sudden, there was a lot of horses in North America.
Oops, a few got loose and then suddenly herds and herds of horses.
Yeah, you can't do that in Civ.
Our sibling show Modcast, they have talked about mods, certainly with regards to the migrating animals. And, oh, the part about resources disappearing if overworked, we kind of had that in Civ 3, when suddenly, oh, this resource is no longer here anymore. Good luck finding another one.
That's more frustrating. I kind of wish they brought these seasons, though. That would be nice, you know, just like in Shogun 2. You have your spring and your winter, but you just have like 2 turns per season or 3 turns. And you can kind of plan your attacks or know that in winter you're probably not going to get attacked, something like that. Then you could have like that little ice bridge between Russia and the U.S. kind of get frozen over or something. Like that would be interesting, I think. But
I was just about to say nobody's going to invade Russia in the winter. Or wait a minute, they tried.
Except the thing is you would have to make your turn time a season. And then if you're trying to play from 4,000 BC to 2180, well, okay.
That's going to get a little messy.
How are you going to model winters when 1 turn is 2 years?
Well, you can just ignore that, you know, and just suspend your disbelief and just forget about that. Because there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense, you know? So some sort of strategic value to timing your attacks.
No, I think you would just cause more problems than not. That would just make no sense.
Well, you could just straight give Russia something that damages stuff in their territory a little bit. That'd be really annoying, but you could do it.
No.
I don't know how many hit points a turn, but it'd be hilarious. Like, every turn, your units just lose, like, 2 hit points in Russia.
No, not necessarily Russia. Just say all Tundra.
I guess. I guess you could do it by terrain.
Yeah, if you compress the time span of civilization again, like I mentioned before, but then, of course, then there's questions of, is this really civilization if we're focusing so much on one? But if you did that, and then you could break down turns, for example, to not just be, well, in the later game, an individual year, or earlier on, dozens, even hundreds of years, then yeah. But yeah, for a scale for Civ, to do it without it being, have it in the game to have it in the game, I think gameplay-wise, yes, I think it would cause more problems, unfortunately.
Although I got to point out the ice bridges, yeah, not so much. Only because we've never actually seen one get created in the last 6 to 8 to 10,000 years. When you start talking, okay, things that could exist. Yes, humans did take advantage of ice bridges. Wasn't a mini ice age. It was a pretty big ice age at the time to migrate from Asia to North America. Problem is, that was 20,000, 15,000 years ago. The time frame doesn't go that far back. Civ covers this time period, and so therefore, that wouldn't exist. But that's why I said, like, the little ice age that did last a chunk of time and a huge amount of time, even in Civ terms, could be more plausible for that sort of thing.
Speaking of plausibility, practical colonies. Oh, boy. A more fully featured colonization mechanic that would encourage Civs to compete with each other over the remaining resources on the planet. Probably the biggest hurdle of such a feature is the game's own civilization parity and balance. But that doesn't mean I can't talk about how colonial mechanics might work, assuming that the issues of parity is addressed. And some of my mechanical proposals may even alleviate the issues caused by parity. For example, founding overseas cities or subjugating other civs could create colonies that could be managed differently than regular cities. Your civ could have policy options to allow you to manage these cities separately from your main cities. These cities could not become unhappy based on your policies towards them and may even declare independence or revolt. So managing these cities or suppressing a revolt could provide some opportunities for more active gameplay in the mid to late game.
He throws in the whole discussion about practically a real colonial plan, or more functionally specific, the usual problem of settling later game cities just isn't functionally useful in Civ so far.
Well, I mean, if you can make them cheap, you can make them quick, and they don't drag your empire down, and they just take a lot of land, maybe they can be helpful in some ways.
They used to be that you would start with buildings constructed in late-game cities in Civ 4, sufficient that they were potentially useful.
But again, you sort of have to have a migration of population mechanic in the game to really model what actually happened in history. Because, again, the concept of the U.S., yeah, look at you. You got a lot of land because you just claimed all this space and your colony that broke free. And look at me, I'm a Civ. How did they get their population? People showed up.
So they just drain the population a little bit from the ones that are next to them and just slowly build up?
Or further away. But yeah, I mean, it was a big migration of population. Kind of like how when the Roman Empire fell, all these new places showed up because there was a mass migration. Migrations are really big in human history. And that's one thing Civ seems to keep trying to ignore.
I think as long as they manage to make it in a way that's not frustrating and it's not like this thing that you can't control and just bothers you as you're playing the game because you're like, oh, people keep leaving or, oh, you know, my people are going here, but I want them here, you know. As long as it's not something like that and they manage to implement it in a way that's controlled, I think it'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean, there's various ways like my people hate me. They're going to leave.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, as long as it's something manageable, I think it's a great idea. Yeah.
Resource market values. Try to condense this as well. In which the value of resources change based on their availability. This would require that luxuries be treated more like strategic resources in that you can stockpile a supply of them and having more of any given luxury would enable more benefits. Instead of a resource value being determined by how much the AI likes or dislikes you, it would be determined by the resource's market value. Luxuries that are spread out across the map would have relatively low market value since most Civs would be able to access and sell it. More localized luxuries would sell at premiums. But I think it also depends on the era that you're talking about. It's like, yeah, this luxury is spread across the map, but we don't know about that yet. We haven't been over there, or we know about it, but we can't access it. So here, we want that particular luxury because it's going to be a benefit because, hey, I'll have We Love the King Day in this particular city or cities. So because of that, even though I don't particularly like you, I like my people being happier better, so therefore I will trade with you. And maybe I'll even pay a premium as compared to a neighbor who would also like it, but wouldn't get that bonus of we love the King Day, so therefore they wouldn't pay as much. I think we kind of already have that in some way.
Not really, but it could be adjusted like that to boost up the cost. But I like his concept that later in the game, as you go, it could be more of a market sort of thing rather than one-on-one. So he starts talking about if a particular ship acquires all sources of particular luxury and corners the market, they could hypothetically fix the price however they want. That's true. The game should, if you have every source of chocolate, you should be able to decide what the price is. But if somebody else starts getting chocolate, maybe no one wants to pay your high price anymore.
Wow.
But although I would say that you could also specialize, maybe. Like if there was some way via culture or tech or something to say, but my chocolate is the better chocolate, so that you could have multiple people with, quote unquote, the chocolate resource, but then you can put more effort into it to say that mine's better and specialize it, and then maybe that would give more trade income. Like if you put in a bunch of yields, whatever that may be, towards that resource, then all of a sudden their chocolate versus like those people's crappy chocolate.
Like perhaps we'll get excited over different regionalities of coffee nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. Stuff like that.
It would be helpful if you had a market system where you could have say, okay, I'm willing to sell this resource. How much is everybody willing to give for it? Rather than have to go to each individual leader and find out, okay, you'll give me this much, you give me that much. And if you corner the market, perhaps even though people might like that, if they dislike you for your other action or inaction in games, then there is no price that they're willing to pay. Or maybe they are willing to pay, but you're just too high. You consistently ask for too much. And therefore, fine, you can have all of those resources, and you can let it rot in your warehouses, because we're not interested in buying it, because the benefit we're going to get, especially as the game goes on, I mean, the way the game is right now, oh, 4 happy when I'm later in the game and I already have 20 Empire happiness, versus earlier in the game when I have 2 without your 4, is going to be very, very different. You're going to be able to sway me very differently or not.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they implemented in a way that's simple to, like, for 30 turns, 5 GPT against your chocolate? Something simple, you know?
Yeah, make it easier to deal with. Sort of. That's more on the ease of use side of things versus current. Another thing you can do if you're doing that is also apply tariffs. Like, maybe your cities will automatically go pick up luxury resources to help with their local happiness or something like that. And then you, as the Empire manager, could say, well, I don't want you picking up that civ's stuff, so I'm going to put an extra tariff on it. And if the city pays for it, fine, I still get more on top of that cost based on diplomatic relations.
Speaking of relations, just 4 more left on this very comprehensive list for Mega Bears fan. Immigration, ethnicity, socioeconomic classes, and city flipping. I think we've kind of actually addressed this in some respects in talking about some other things. A city's population can be made up of percentages of different civs. Oh, this reminds me of Civ 4, and he brings that up. And proximity to another civ would lead to immigration that would lead to mixed populations at border cities. I feel like we've talked about this before. Your diplomatic actions towards a demographic group's parent civ could then result in them becoming unhappy or outright resisting. And if I remember correctly, CC even flipped to another civ if a majority of the population belonged to that forum civ and preferred its culture. Yeah, this is worthwhile.
Yeah, except I'd also like something in there to go the exact opposite. Like the people migrating away from that civ actually hate it. So they don't like its government type, or they don't like its culture, or they were unhappy there. And therefore, if you are mean to them, they like you more. The concept of going back to a population-based core mechanic, so each individual point of population has an ethnicity, has a religion, has blah, 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 could be a much more functionally useful game. Because then when you do have that migratory stuff, when you do have that social economic class, like say you make all your engineers out of X ethnicity, or you don't let these people go here or whatever, I don't know, depending on how silly you make the mechanics, that could cause some intense, especially if, say, like we were talking about before, Civ A is beating up on Civ B and kind of forces all their population to go running into Civ C, and now Civ C has to deal with the fact that they're getting overrun by a bunch of people who aren't necessarily liking of their government style or religion or yada yada yada, and how they've dealt with them in the past could cause problems.
And I think you'd have to tie that into the diplomacy where you could state that as a reason why you dislike a Civ or why you denounce them or things like that, but that's a whole other topic.
Yep. And then, of course, if you're going to go that route, then over the course of history, maybe if you have multiple ethnicity starting groups and you start growing, maybe you get a merged one. And that could be a way to modify the Civ over time. The Franks exist because they came from Barb class group and migrated into France where there was a lot of Gaelic and even some Romans and stuff. And then they all kind of got together and over time merged out into a new ethnicity. And that could adjust things.
Yeah, and if you're on the conquering warpath, some empires in the past did a much better job of integrating existing cultures and people's beliefs and religions and people, you know, like managing cities at a local municipal level. If they recognize, you're not so concerned about this particular religion in order to become ultimately a citizen of the empire, then maybe they're not going to be as upset to now be a part of your empire. And to tie back, imagine was saying, perhaps they're even happier. Even though their cultural background is with the Civ you're fighting, they're happy to be with you because you treat them better. You have built up that positive reputation. And if you continue to do that through your actions in-game as well as maybe policies that you adopt or don't adopt, then that's just going to continue to fuel your engine of conquering.
Like going from a Civ that does inquisitions if you don't have their religion to going to one that has the kind of a religious freedom or at least tolerance.
Yep. Exactly.
Or, again, on that note, maybe you don't like people of this faith, so you set up a policy that says anytime somebody tries to migrate here, we block them. So you don't
try to build a wall to keep them from doing that?
Yeah, stuff like that. But then that could be on the diplomacy side where you say, my policy on migrants is you stay out. But then if, say, you get into a war with that group and then you take one of their cities, all of a sudden all the people in that city who are of that group turn around and go, wait, you didn't like us before this. You were preventing us from doing stuff before. Now we hate you even more.
So now we're going to prevent you from doing stuff.
Yeah, in this city.
Or delay you at least.
You started it.
Exactly, stuff like that. Or stuff like Assyria in real history did a really good job with it, where they basically, when they conquered something, they basically took the population and mixed them all across the empire so that their unhappiness wasn't concentrated in the zone in that area. They had a more generally upset population, but there wasn't enough of them in any one area to actually cause trouble.
Hey, man.
Yo.
Are you Assyria? I apologize right away.
That was really bad.
Yeah. If that was bad and you knew it was bad.
Yep.
I did anyway.
Spectacularly bad.
Which might have been the reason why I did it in the first place, to be honest. Conscription, standing forces, and mercenaries. Why am I thinking about drafting in Civ 4? I don't know.
Slavery-based drafting. Kill the population to get a unit.
Yeah.
I think it's Civ 4 is so strong.
It's like we've been conscripted. We haven't died yet.
Yet. Dot, dot, dot.
Having mechanics in place that require units to be conscripted from your population could impose negative side effects for civs that maintain a standing army that they aren't actively using and would encourage such civs to disband their excess units or convert them to civilian duty. Other than, you know, disbanding excess units because you now have economy problems. Don't necessarily want military units to be drawn directly from population, though I'm open to the idea, but I would like to see strong mechanics in place that encourage players to disband unnecessary military units or to conscript temporary mercenaries or draftees. This would help smaller, more peaceful civs to be able to mobilize a defensive force on short notice and could help reduce the ability of larger civs to steamroll over smaller foes.
Well, I mean, you could tie in, again, more policy choices, like a more militaristic civ has its population always being prepared, so all its population always have weaponry, and they've done fighting because that's part of their cultural history.
Yep.
So that when you do, as a more militaristic civ, say, we need to go to war, let's conscript, then you have a better standing army than all those people in that merchant city who really want nothing to do with fighting.
Yeah.
And then they get conscripted and, well, they suck at it.
So then the question you're dealing with your conscripts is when they're like, we want you to jump. How high? As opposed to, you want us to what?
Yeah, what is that?
Just jump? What?
That could be interesting. I'm not entirely sure how functionally useful it would be in a big game like Civ. I mean, taking a unit from a population, that could be useful. That prevents mass warmongers from mass spamming units and healing units and yada, yada, yada with no population change. That could be a useful and functional thing. And then, therefore, if you want to be a big warmonger, well, you better also grow your pop. So you can do it. So that would be a tie-in that way. But also, if you do that, then you can actually have a realistic thing where this unit came from this city because it's composed of this population. And when it dies, the people in that city, not so happy with you, which became a thing.
They can maybe go to Warcraft 3 route as well. Eventually have to pay a higher percentage of your gold per turn, depending on how many units you get.
And gosh, if you tied this with the part about having different cultures in your city, you could be even specific of like, okay, when we conscript, we're going to you guys first.
Yep.
And they're all, what?
Exactly.
Why should we sacrifice for you? We've only been part of your empire for a couple of generations. What about these guys that have been part of it 10 generations? Ah, they're in positions of power and you're not, so yeah.
Yep. And maybe if they hate you, you get a penalty.
Yep.
Because they maybe were just recently conquered and you're mean to them. So maybe they just don't fight as well as people who have been core to the empire for longer and actually want to fight for it.
This would work better than, hey, my people are really, really unhappy. We've got too many people. Oh, just let them starve, and then you won't have so much happiness problems. Okay.
Yeah, that too.
Not so much.
But the concept of standing forces being not around so much in the early game is kind of an important one, because real standing permanent army sort of stuff really didn't happen until much later in history.
Yeah.
Whereas the big warmongers at the early eras of civilization really did move population, and it was very heavy based on mass conscription. And then when you go through monarchies, it was the dukes and all them who have their own little personal armies. But then if you really wanted to do something, including naval side, you had to pay a lot to get it going and conscript to get it going. So there could be some functionally interesting civ mechanics to pull in there.
Railroads as a hub-based supplement to road instead of replacement. Railroads should not replace roads. I would like for railroads to act more like a hub structure. This is Mega Bears fans writing. Similar to how airlifts currently function. Units should enter and exit the railroad only at designated hubs, cities, and movement along the railroad should be uniform among all units. And then there's also the part about the unit of railroads should expending coal. If you run out of coal, you cannot transport additional units. Expended coal is returned to the player's stockpile at the end of the turn, and you start over again. How many units can I move? Units.
Okay, that's getting a little complicated there.
The coal, I was up good up until
the coal. Yeah.
Maybe you need coal to use the railroads, but not necessarily
micromanage it to that degree.
Yeah, that could be more to that point.
Maybe one coal per station.
Well, I was even thinking more about, but for example, when we talk about hay, so after you construct factories, do you still need to have the coal in order for the factories to work?
Yeah.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you also need coal in order to be able to construct the railroad, and if you wanted to be really particular, if you lose access to the coal, you can't move as fast as you would have otherwise on railroad, but still faster than a road, you know, somewhere in between, that could work.
Yeah. It has to be simple to some degree, you know?
It needs to be more straightforward. I do agree with this concept that railroads shouldn't just replace roads as standard, because they didn't. Like, even in big countries, you have primary links. Those are your railroads. But then you still have crap tons of roads off of those. Like, we don't have rail everywhere.
Yeah, no, it's like, I want all of my cities to be connected to my empire, but this city, it's important, but not as important. Oh, well, now that we've got railroads, you must construct them. Did we forget how to construct roads? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, but I'll just construct a railroad. Yes, you can. That'll be twice as much money to maintain. And twice as long to build, more or less. Excuse me, what?
Yeah. No, I like the idea of it being more of a hub style, especially for industry. So your market city is connected to your industry city, and that would give you, via railroad, benefits to that. Ability to move goods and things like that is better if you're connected that way. I mean, unit-wise, if you really think about it, most units that go on railroads are more like what he's actually discussing with all movement along railroads should be uniform. Because unlike in Civ 5, where, you know, your tank on railroad is hyperspeed dude, who can stop and do stuff as they go, that's not really the case. when they put tanks on the railroad, they literally put tanks on the railroad.
It literally was on a big car. You could not turn it around and start firing.
I mean, you could, but...
Well, yeah, that might have bad consequences.
Might have consequences, yes. You're still moving at the speed of the train, not the speed of the tank. And then you have to unpack it when you get there.
Hey, yes, where aiming becomes wing and a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's when you airdrop the tank.
Tanks don't even need to fire to have consequences. They just land on something, squish.
Yeesh. Got it.
Yeah, it'd be nice to have a little bit more consideration about your coal, because usually it's something I just kind of forget once I, like, get some of it. I use it a little bit, and there you go. Forget about it.
And last but not least, why wasn't this first on the list? Some people in our audience will probably be saying navigable rivers. Value of rivers has been heavily abstracted in both Civilization IV and Civ V. And as an aside, Mega Bears fan said he played little to none of Civ 1 to Civ 3, so just a little of Civ 3, which is why a lot of what he's referring back to in previous Civs was 4 and 5. In Civ 6, I would really like to see rivers as navigable. The best way to do this would be to put rivers in a tile instead of along the edges between tiles. This would allow cargo ships to navigate rivers and connect to the larger ocean, but also allow some naval units to travel through rivers. This would make rivers more tactically meaningful, and protecting the access points to rivers would become important. Landlocked empires would be vulnerable to seafaring civs that can reach inland cities via rivers, and landlocked empires might even have an opportunity to build a navy if they control rivers that have access to oceans.
Okay, here's the problem with that. Anything that is going to be built on a river is going to have an extremely low keel, like very, very tiny, boat. Can't get very far. Tiny boat goes in ocean, goes poof. The reason you need ocean for most ocean-going vessels is because it's big. You can't build big stuff in a river. So there's a bit of an issue on that. I think the realistic point, though, is more that the size of the map is a problem with that distraction. There are, quote-unquote, big rivers on the map, but because you're looking at it from so high up, it doesn't take up that much space. Like, the amount of space a river takes up in a hex is small. And that's kind of the functional problem with that, because then you put a destroyer in a river, and all of a sudden it's blocking all of the infantry units that might also take up the 90% of the hex that doesn't exist there. And then you start getting into other problems.
If you decided this is something you wanted to do gameplay-wise, you would obviously have to make this decision very early in order for that abstraction to work. But then you have to question, do I really want it to work to that degree?
Yeah, I mean, get a picture of the Civil War scenario. Yes, when you're zoomed in so close that rivers are actually a thing when you take a picture, then yes, they should be there, and you could put bridges and other stuff like that in there. But when you're playing on the normal size of aspect ratio of planet to things, it's kind of hard to make it a navigable and incorporate it into the system.
Any hex with a river, you can just put a boat there. It would look really silly.
I'm on a boat.
And they have terrain, so you're rolling up with frigates into rivers and like whaling on cities in the middle of the continent with like frigates all over the place. It'd be great. Just great.
Although I suppose in the case of Civ 5, I am a boat.
Yep.
Rise of Nations as well.
Problem solved.
I mean, maybe they could just make river-class boats only, as you guys said.
Well, actually, when I think of navigable rivers, I think less about boats as compared to, so, this river, it can connect my two cities, right, for a trade road. Don't need a road, right? Right?
Right.
Should.
Right.
Well, that should sort of be a thing. Because that's an abstraction.
Indeed.
Two cities on the same river, or in a river system, yes, trade should be abstractable through that. At least in the earlier game, when you're not trying to move mass volume of stuff. But in the early game, where you're moving just some stuff down the river, small amounts of goods or population, it makes sense.
It would be nice to have it as a strategic tool, too. Like, you know you can't get a tax instead of just minus 20% type deal. Yeah, it would be nice to have that.
Well, thicker rivers.
Thank you, Mega Bears fan, for that comprehensive look of a Civ 6 wish list.
Call in today. In North America, the number is 301-637-7659.
That's 301-637-POLY.
In Europe, 44-121-288-7659. That's 44-121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
For more information on Polycast,
our sibling shows Modcast, Revcast, and Turncast,
or about Polycast in general,
log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net. Record date September 5th, 2015. Civilization 4, 5, and Beyond Earth sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright Civilized Communication at civcom.net.